Silence is golden, especially when it comes to brakes. That's why Napa Silent Guard are built to be one of the smoothest and most quiet brakes on the market. Made with fiber-reinforced shims that eliminate noise for the life of the pad, rubber-coated hardware for a better fit, and quality design that meets and exceeds OE performance. Silent Guard brakes deliver the stopping power drivers demand. Available now at Napa locations nationwide.
It was a season that saw seeds planted by a legend bloom on the biggest stage possible.
I still think of 2004 as part of the healing from 2001.
This has got to be the greatest day of my life.
A season that brought out the best.
We're right in the middle of this championship, so we'll just see what happens at Homestead.
And the worst.
And now they're tackling one another and a fight is on in the pit area.
While crowning a champion in the most suspenseful way.
We dodged a huge, huge, devastating proposition that would have taken us out of this championship.
A racing season that was one of the most impactful in the sport's history.
There's so much going on behind the scenes in 04, but the headlines that made the sport continue, I think we'll be 25 years from now when we're celebrating the 100th, somebody will look at a yardstick of our history and 2004 is going to be on there.
Motor Racing Network welcomes you to NASCAR Live Presents 2004, Chasing History. Hello, everybody. I'm Mike Bagley, and welcome to Episode 9 of NASCAR Live Presents 2004, Chasing History. In Episode 8, we chronicled races 4 through 6 of the chase for the Nextel Cup. Those races included Joe Nemechek snagging a chaotic win at Kansas, Jimmy Johnson turning a track into his own personal playground, and the tragic events that transpired during our visit to Martinsville Speedway. This week, we dive into races 7 through 9 of the chase. Those three races include Dale Earnhardt Jr. scratching and clawing at the points lead, Jimmy Johnson emerging as the champion favorite, and a visit to Darlington Raceway that for many just didn't feel right. But let's start with the aftermath of the Hendrick plane crash. Even though Jimmy Johnson had won the week prior at Martinsville and was emerging as the championship frontrunner, the whole Hendrick organization had just endured tragedy as 10 employees and family members were tragically lost in a plane crash heading to Martinsville. The sport was mourning the loss of these individuals, and yet while this tragedy was hard for so many to swallow, there was still a task at hand. They would have to return to the racetrack the next week with heavy hearts. With all of these emotions running through the minds of many, Jeff Gordon says no one handled the adversity better than Rick Hendrick.
The real question is Rick and Linda, how were they able to do that? Because Rick was at Hendrick Motorsports just days after that, you know, and talking to all the employees, we all got together and, you know, unfortunately in these situations, life goes on, racing goes on, right? And there was another race that we had to get to and just, you know, having Rick's presence there and his strength to say, listen, I'm devastated, we all are, but we're going to have to grieve in our own way, but we have a race to run, and I want you to know that, you know, this company is family to me, and you all mean something to me, and we're going to get through this together. That just blew my mind and everybody else's mind that, you know, Rick had just lost his son, and yet he was there giving his time to us. And that's, to me, what gave our entire company strength and gave me personal strength. And we actually rallied around that. Like, that sent a very strong message to all of us. I don't know how he did that. I really don't. But he did. And so, yeah, it's probably a better question, you know, to ask Rick, because that's what changed it for me and for so many others.
Despite the tragedy, Hendrick Motorsports traveled to Atlanta Motor Speedway with the goal of winning the Bass Pro Shops MBNA 500 in honor of those that had passed in the plane crash. Ryan Newman started from the pole and would lead an early chunk of the race, but the man that dominated the most was Mark Martin, who led 227 of the 325 laps. Late in the race, chaos would ensue. Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Carl Edwards made contact during the 312th lap, bringing out the last caution of the day. Jimmy Johnson was the beneficiary of that late race incident as he beat Jeff Burton, Carl Edwards, and Mark Martin on the restart to claim his 13th win of his career, the 7th on the season, and his 3rd straight. Jimmy reflects on the day as a shift for the organization.
We could get hot and, you know, then we were just streaky. It was one way or the other. And we had the plane crash in, in Martinsville, was that November time frame, and just the amount of pain that we were all dealing with and trying to get to the track, wondering if we were even going to the racetrack after Martinsville. There was a question, what is Rick going to do? What does Rick and Linda want to do? And I'll never forget the, I think it was the Monday after the race, we were all at Hendrick Motorsports, and they showed up, and Rick somehow found the strength to say, look, you know, we're hurting, but we're going racing. We're going to Atlanta this weekend, and let's go race in their honor. And you know, we knew our marching orders at that point, but you know, we win Martinsville, we win Atlanta. You know, big shift in our optimism for the championship, and it was such a shift that myself and I think all of the 48 team, and certainly a lot of Hendrick Motorsports, felt it was going to happen. Like, we were carrying on the honor of the plane crash.
In honor of those who had passed in the Hendrick plane crash a week prior, Jimmy drove a Polish victory lap around the mile and a half speedway. In victory lane, Hendrick teammates Jeff Gordon, Terry Labonte, and Brian Vickers joined Jimmy as they wore their caps backwards in honor of Rick Hendrick's late son, Ricky. Aside from the feel-good story of Jimmy Johnson and Hendrick Motorsports obtaining triumph in the light of adversity, that day was the start of something new for one competitor. Martin Truex Jr. made his NASCAR Cup Series debut that fall afternoon, and it had yet to be seen whether or not he would find a place and long-term home in the Cup Series. Martin finished 37th and had shown quite the promise in the now Xfinity Series, but it wasn't an easy transition for the young driver. MRN's Dave Moody reflects on the early stages of Truex's career.
It took a while for Martin to evolve into the Martin Truex Jr. that we know today and respect today as a solid stand-up every week standard in our sport. First few years of his Cup career, it looked like he might be remembered forever as one of those guys that dominated in Busch or what's now the Xfinity Series, but never quite caught on in Cup. But then he finally got to the right place with the right team and began to show us what he was capable of. And he just hasn't stopped.
With three races to go in the chase, the point standings look drastically different. Kurt Busch still obtained the lead, but his early race troubles allowed Jimmy Johnson an opportunity to close the gap. At this moment, Kurt had experienced his worst race of the chase, and now Johnson was within 9 points of the lead. Over time, Kurt has tried to forget about that day as it was one of their low points of their title run.
If Atlanta in the playoffs could have gone better. We were fast. The engine blew really early in the race. Very awkward because we hadn't had an engine problem all year. I think that was the first year we switched to Yates and Doug, you know, Roush Yates Power. And so if that one got away, if we would have finished decent that day in Atlanta, we might have had the championship wrapped up before Homestead. So that one stung quite a bit, but we were very thankful to get through some of my weaker tracks like Martinsville. I cranked out a sixth. I think we finished sixth at Talladega in the playoffs. If you can just get out of there with points, that's usually a good day. So I look back on the things that went right. Other than just that Atlanta engine failure.
He wasn't the only driver that wanted to put that day behind him. Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s crash on lap 312 resulted in a 33rd place finish, dropping him from 3rd to 5th in the championship standings and 58 points behind Busch for the title. So after a hectic and headline-filled day, the sport would travel to Phoenix Raceway, with points opportunities starting to dwindle. Kurt Busch and Jimmy Johnson were atop the leaderboard of the chase, with Jeff Gordon sitting in 3rd, Mark Martin in 4th, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. in 5th. After posting the fastest time in practice and qualifying for the 4th straight week, Ryan Newman will lead the field to the green flag in front of 105,000 fans in attendance.
Pace truck pulling in behind the pit wall. They come out of turn number 4, move into the front straightaway. They're about 150 feet away from the start-finish line. Green flag goes in the air, and we're underway in the Checker Auto Parts 500. They race hard to turn number 1, get single file among the first two, scrambles back at 3rd place.
That's where Casey Kane and Joe Nemechek race side by side. Kane very strong on the outside lane, will grab 3rd. Now going to work on Brian Vickers for 2nd.
Single file for the top 5 positions. It's Ryan Newman opening up a gap over Brian Vickers of a car length and a half. Casey Kane in that 3rd spot. Joe Nemechek in 4th. Everybody riding the bottom for turns 3 and 4.
Newman will lead 59 laps, but this day would be about Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Jeff Gordon. After a short rain delay, Gordon led 100 of the scheduled 312 laps. Dale Earnhardt Jr. would also spend some time out in front. The two drivers battled it out and put on a show for the spectators in Avondale, Arizona.
Earn Earnhardt on the back bumper of Gordon, looking for room to race, looking for the lead on the back straightaway.
Dale Earnhardt Jr. is right there. He looks briefly to the inside as they fly through the dogleg up the back straight at Phoenix. Oh, Earnhardt Jr. almost made contact with Gordon, but he didn't need to. Down to the inside line of turn four, side by side for the lead off turn four.
It will be a dead heat at the start finish line, door to door. They go back into turn number one. This is for the win. There are nine laps to go. They go back to turn two.
Almost leaning on each other. Dale Earnhardt Jr. to the lead at Phoenix. Jeff Gordon falls in line in second. Casey Mears trying to track him down from third.
Fans are stomping up and down in the grandstands at Phoenix as Dale Earnhardt Jr. tries to open up the lead by a car length over second place man Jeff Gordon. And third place man is Casey Mears and Kevin Harvick.
Here comes Junior off turn four, down to the start-finish line. It will be eight laps to go, and he's checking out. Pulling away now by nearly a second over Jeff Gordon.
As Junior started to pull away, something unpredictable happened.
Both Evernham cars are having problems. Jeremy Mayfield is off the pace. Casey Kane's problem, Mike Bagley, looks like maybe it's a tire
rub. Casey Mears loses it in turn number one. Mears around and into the outside wall. Casey Mears loses control. The target dodge slams into the outside wall in turn one.
That will bring out the yellow flag for the 11th time. Caution is on the field with just some six laps to go. Let's go back to turn two.
Casey Mears is in the wall, and Robbie Gordon is putting a smoke screen up here in turn number one, all almost simultaneously. Casey Mears came into turn one. Tire problem sent him spinning into the outside wall. The window net is down. Casey is fine. And at the same time, Robbie Gordon goes up in a cloud of smoke, and it looks like he's dusting for mosquitoes now as smoke continues to billow from the singular wireless Chevrolet.
NASCAR would make the decision to extend the race with a green, white, checkered flag finish, and Dale would have to fend off the pack one more time.
Here comes the field off turn number four to the start-finish line. Green flag is waving. Junior on the gas, trying to get away from Jeff Gordon, but Jeff stays right with him.
Everyone single file coming into the corner except Casey Kane. He'll go to the outside of the racetrack. Battles on for third. Ryan Newman slips. Harvick tries to take advantage as Earnhardt leaves them all in his dust.
And he is pulling away by some 5 to 6 car lengths over Jeff Gordon, who's under attack from Ryan Newman. Newman takes his dodge down low into turn three. Kevin Harvick leaning on Casey Kane for the fifth position.
Ryan Newman's going to take second place away, if he can, from Jeff Gordon. Gordon's got a lot of horsepower in the front straightaway. Four cars locked up for second place. Ryan Newman, Casey Kane, Kevin Harvick. They go to one.
Earnhardt's gone. He'll be the winner this afternoon, but they are knotted up double wide, three rows deep for second. Jeff. Here's Ryan Newman to the inside of Jeff Gordon for the final time.
Jeff Gordon, Ryan Newman, Casey Kane, Kevin Harvick, and Jimmy Johnson. Tight pack of five cars racing for the second spot, but it's all going on way behind the leader, Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Budweiser Chevy comes pouring off turn four for the second year in a row. He will win the Checker Auto Parts 400. Ryan Newman squeezes by Jeff Gordon. He gets the second spot. Gordon gets third. Kevin Harvick finishes fourth. And Casey Kane comes in fifth.
In the chase, you were fifth in points. A lot of folks didn't think you could leapfrog four teams. Now up to third with two to go. Assess your chances coming up on Darlington and Miami.
Well, we ain't dominated any of those racetracks, but with the team that I got now, I feel like we can go in there and definitely have a better weekend than we've ever had at either one of those tracks. We'll be in Homestead all weekend, or all week actually, really working our guts out every day, testing and trying to get it right. You know, we're giving it a good effort. You know, we thought about last weekend and the opportunity we give up last weekend all week long, and just really maintained, try to be patient all day. And I knew I had a car that could win. I just didn't want to make another mistake like I did last week, and try to put ourselves back in position to run for the championship. We got a lot to gain. These guys ain't going to be easy to beat.
The victory was quite the bounce-back performance for Dale Earnhardt Jr. But even though they won, car chief Tony Urie Jr. knew their performance at Atlanta was detrimental to their championship hopes.
We sat there and led most laps all day at Atlanta at the end of the year, and we had told him with like 10 to go, we're like, look, dude, don't do nothing stupid. Just finish third. You're good. You ain't got to win it, because he was kind of getting upset because he, you know, led most of the laps, and now he's getting beat by two cars, and we're like, don't sweat it. You know, and then ultimately we kind of come up off of two there, and Carl gave him the shot in the back, and we hit the inside fence. So, and ultimately that was the championship. I mean, we went from third to like 33rd or something like that in one lap with three to go. And it was just like we all went, ooh, you know, because that's the one that hurt. We didn't know if we could overcome that. You know, we were like, if we would have just finished third, now we have no problem, because we knew we were going, Phoenix beat us. Like, we knew we were going to Phoenix, and we went there the next week and won. But the problem is you can't go into Homestead with a 60-point deficit.
Consistency is key, and Kurt Busch's ability to do just that allowed him to retain a 41-point lead over Jeff Gordon, while Junior's win put him almost within striking distance, sitting 47 points back. The stage was now set as two races remained in the chase, and the margin of error for Kurt was beginning to minimize. A trip to Darlington Raceway was up next on the docket, and before we even got to the track, the lead-up had no shortage of drama. As we discussed in Episode 6, this was the first year NASCAR had moved the Southern 500, one of the sport's crown jewels, off of Labor Day weekend, and fans as well as drivers were upset to say the least. Adam Alexander, who was a pit reporter for MRN at the time, reflects on NASCAR's decision to change tradition.
I remember being at Darlington in November and calling it the Southern 500. And you guys like you and I, on the media side of it, we want the big event. And you want to create those moments. And the best way to do that is on those crown jewel stages. We know Darlington and the Southern 500 is a great foundation for all of that. And when you would approach a driver and you would do an interview and you say, what would it mean to you to win the Southern 500? You would get that look like, it's not Labor Day weekend. And in my eyes, even though they would take it and they would put it on their resume as a win in the crown jewel if they were able to take the checkered flag, I felt like there was more pushback from the drivers who felt like we were moving away from tradition, and therefore it lost a little bit of the luster that it would have had if you were doing it on Labor Day weekend.
This controversy sparked an interesting question. Is this something NASCAR would ever do again, now that times have changed? Former NASCAR president and now Vice Chairman Mike Helton gave his thoughts on the discussion.
I can't speculate on that because I don't make those decisions anymore, fortunately. But I will tell you that Ben Kennedy does. And Ben is as respectful and appreciative of our heritage as any new opportunity we can get. So that new opportunity's got to be really significant. But you can also see Ben coming back to some traditional places because that's in his DNA. I don't know what the schedule will look like in 25. I don't know what's going to look like in 2030. But I do know that there's a consciousness in our leadership across the board. Steve Phelps, Steve O'Donnell, Ben Kennedy, obviously Lisa and Jim and myself. But the players that make those calls and understand what they're doing and how the industry and the fans feel about it. There's a lot of appreciation for our heritage and history. There's also always something that can happen that, you know, kind of forces you to do that or leads you to it and you can't say no. You know, with the revival of two races in Darlington, Southern 500 again, the role that Southern 500 plays in the playoffs, and, you know, that staple is a huge part of our sport.
So an event that already had an abundance of intrigue and headlines would get underway as our championship hopefuls would have to navigate 367 laps around the 1.366-mile oval.
Green flag is in the air, and the Mountain Dew Southern 500 is underway. Kurt Busch down to the inside, Jeff Gordon down to the outside as they jockey to see who's going to lead the first lap.
It'll be Kurt Busch first into turn number one. Jeff Gordon slides up in a line behind him. Jimmie Johnson will ride in third. Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Mark Martin.
Mark Martin sweeps around Tony Stewart. He will pick up that spot further back. Almost going to stack him three wide now. Here's Jamie McMurray getting a run on Matt Kenseth off the end of the back straightaway as they race back into turn three.
Jeff Gordon would snag the lead quickly, but the car to beat was the 48 of Jimmie Johnson. Earlier in the year, Jimmy had snagged the victory at Darlington and was on a mission to do so again. As he sat fourth in the chase ahead of the Southern 500, Jimmy would need a strong day to have a chance at the championship. It wouldn't be a simple task. With less than 15 laps to go, he began to reel in race leader Jamie McMurray.
Jump back up to the lead. Jimmie Johnson is there. He's about a car length back of Jamie McMurray here at the start-finish line. There are 11 laps to go. Is he going to get around him over in turn two?
Jimmie Johnson is right where he needs to be, on the back bumper of Jamie McMurray, but McMurray is not going to go quietly. He is there, but McMurray holds him off two.
He's doing a good job of holding him off, but the question is, for how long? Johnson is on the back bumper. Here he goes, looking to the inside now, sweeps up to the outside. All the way to the wall goes Johnson, looking for the lead.
Actually looks to the outside momentarily, doesn't see the opening there. He'll fall back in line, but he is on McMurray's bumper, just about pushing him down the front straightaway. Let's see if he breaks out of line and challenges in one.
Jimmie Johnson needs to get the job done in a hurry because Casey Kane, Kurt Busch, Mark Martin coming on strong. Still, it's McMurray in the lead.
Yeah, Everybody on the top five pouring on the coals here in the late stages at Darlington. Battle for the lead. McMurray, half a car length down in front of Jimmy Johnson. Further back, Kurt Busch goes to work on Casey Kane one more time.
Kurt Busch takes a look down to the inside. Nowhere to go. Again, they come off turn number four, and for the lead, Jimmy Johnson dropped the nose of the car down, trying to get underneath Jamie McMurray. He couldn't do it. They go back to turn two one more time.
Johnson again looking to the inside, but Jamie McMurray fighting hard, refusing to yield. This time he'll have to give it up. Jimmy Johnson to the lead off two.
And like he had done seven other times in 2004, Jimmy Johnson would claim his eighth victory of the season.
Here's Jimmy Johnson. He's trying to win the last Mountain Dew Southern 500. 15 car lengths in hand. Jimmy Johnson leads off turn four.
Jimmy Johnson will accomplish that feat, winning the last Mountain Dew Southern 500 and making the sweep for 2004 at Darlington. He scores the victory.
Last year, Terry Lavani won the last Southern 500 on Labor Day. You win the last Southern 500. What does that mean to you?
It means a lot to me to win here at this racetrack. This is such a tough track to race at. We have eight wins now on the season with, you know, everybody still healing from the loss of everybody on that Hendrick airplane. This is good medicine, and we'll just keep rolling with it. And from what I understand, we're right in the middle of this championship. So we'll just see what happens at Homestead.
18 points down for you, 21 for Jeff Gordon behind Kurt Busch. Your thoughts going into that final race?
It's all on the line. It's going to be a heck of a shootout. NASCAR got what they wanted here.
As you heard from Winston Kelly, the championship was set. Kurt Busch was in control of his own destiny going into the final race of the season. Next week on NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History, NASCAR's best provide us with a finale for the ages as the first ever chase for the cup was decided.
Yeah, Fenning said, all right, all four are back on there. They're tight. We now see that the center section of the wheel came apart from the outer rim. So it was a wheel failure. It wasn't a wheel bearing or something with the hub. So it just gave me the, okay, let's just reset and work our way back up. And I don't remember much of the rest of the day until about 50 to go.
Until then, I'm Mike Bagley. For all of us here at the Motor Racing Network, thank you for joining us on NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History.
Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical, underage sale prohibited. Introducing Zone Nicotine Pouches, the perfect balance of unparalleled comfort, longer-lasting flavor, and nicotine that satisfies. Whether you're zoning in during the race or zoning out after a tough day at work, Zone gets you there faster and keeps you there longer. Available in 7 flavors and in 6 and 9 milligram strengths. Find Zone at ZonePouches.com and retailers near you. Own your Zone with Zone Nicotine Pouches.